All right. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's great to be here with this group. It's great to be here whenever I'm with a group of alcoholics. I just like hanging out with alkies, and I like hanging out with a lot of people. I was at a Bible study today at 7:30. This is a pretty cramped up day to me, these Thursdays. At 7:30 in the morning for the last 15 years, I've gone to a men's Bible study from 7:30 to 8:30. As a matter of fact, I'm in charge of getting the about a year ago, I became in charge of getting the donuts and the bagels, and you know, once you're in charge of something like that, you don't let go of that until you die. It's like AA. Nobody takes it over unless you're dead, and they say, "Where's the bagels?" Somebody, you know. So I have to get up early and get those things for these guys, and you know, and then at 12 o'clock, I do this thing over at the steps. Over at the Brickle Group, and so I was with a bunch of Valkies, and then we have lunch with a bunch of guys I sponsor, and now I'm over here with you guys, and it's just great. I love being here with you guys, and one of the blessings of being in Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual fellowship. It's a great blessing. You know, I heard many years prior to this time that the man or woman you'll end up being will depend greatly on the people you hang out in the next 5 years. Will depend greatly on the people you hang out with, and the books you read. And what I've learned is the books I read really pretty much depend upon who I hang out with. So I guess who you hang out with is a pretty big deal. I mean, that's what my mother used to say: you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. You know, I mean, you show me who you hang out with, and I'll show you what you're going to become and what your real deal is. Because really, who you hang out with determines the conversations you're going to have. And, you know, the funny thing is, whatever your conversations are, they sort of follow you around, you know what I mean? Even after you have the conversations in your car throughout the day, you know, what you're conversing, what you're telling yourself, the stuff you're talking to yourself about. So hanging out with people and who you hang out with is a big deal. It says in the big book, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And one would presume, I think it makes common sense, that if you meet people in here and you want what they have, you're probably going to try to make it your business to somehow get in front of them or hang out with them. So, you know, that's part of it, who you hang out with. And so I'm really happy to be here. It is a funny thing about alcoholics. I took my wife out to dinner the other night, and this happens to me often. We went out to a nice restaurant somewhere, and there were about 20 people at the front door and all crowded around and everything. It was just like one drunk. You know, he was clearly inebriated and slurring his words, and he didn't know me from Adam. He's with a crowd of people, and I'm just standing there with my wife, and he attaches himself to me. I can't tell you how many times he, like, attaches himself to me. He's, like, drawn to me. And he says to my wife, he says, excuse me. I haven't even said, he says, he's a good guy. Slurring his word. He's a good guy. I like him. He's a good guy. And my wife gives me one of these looks saying, like, she's like, she says, how do you do this? How is this? It's bad enough that you hang out with him all the time, that I never see you, that I'm an AA widow, that you're always like, how is it we go out, they find you, they seek you out? And I said to her, and I believe this is true, I said, listen, they know. I can't explain it. They know. No matter how drunk they are, no matter how crazy they are, if you're an alky, you just know. You say, I don't know, I like this guy, you know? They sense it. It's like dogs or something, you know? It's that alky gene or whatever those things were given off, you know? They just sort of sense that this guy isn't judging me, you know? This guy isn't. They just sense they're not being judged. It's just maybe the way you look at them. You know, it's just the way you look at them. Everybody's looking at them one way and you're looking at them another way. They just sense that you're not judging them. They just feel comfortable with you. And, you know, so that's the way it is. So I like hanging out with you guys, and it's good to be here. And we're on one of my favorite steps, step 7 tonight. And I like step 7. Well, you know, listen, I've been sober. It'll be in January, if I make it, it'll be 31 years. Well, thank you. It's the way you do that is don't drink and don't die. I've been working on not drinking and not dying for 31 years, and it's been working out for me so far, you know. So that's how you become an old-timer, I suppose. So, but and so I like, I've learned a lot of stuff, and, you know, I've learned a lot of stuff in 31 years. I mean, you learn, I mean, when you come in here, you know everything. I mean, you really do know everything. But, I mean, you're brilliant right before you get in here. But actually, after 31 years, you forget 99% of the stuff you know. You become real stupid, and you've learned a lot through experience. And you know that old line my sponsor used to say to me, when the man with experience meets the man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. And, you know, we can have all sorts of theories and all sorts of ideas about how life works and how we work and how everything works, but there's nothing like going through the jungle 15,000 times to teach you how to go through the jungle. You know, it's nothing like doing it, you know, and I've been doing it for 31 years, not just talking about it, doing it. And, you know, they say you can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? And AA, you know, I'll tell you something. There's three things people shouldn't see. They shouldn't see how sausages are made.
That's true.
They should never see how laws are made. And they shouldn't see how people stay sober. It's all ugly. It's, none of it is pretty. You know, it's always up, downs, and sideways. And the reason I like talking about the seventh step is one of the things, you see, I like to think, I was telling somebody today, I said, I'd like to think I do grown-up AA. Grown-up AA. Now, listen, I love AA. I love every type of AA. I'm not putting down AA, you know. You know, to me, it's like a giant symphony. It's like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. I love Drunkalogs. I do. I love Drunkalogs. I think Drunkalogs helped me out tremendously watching AA comics and AA humorists. And then I drank, and then I drank in AA stories. And even though they're Drunkalogs, you do get something out of it. And there's identification, and you learn something about yourself. And it's something good about going to an AA dinner or banquet and hearing an AA speaker that makes you laugh and maybe makes you think and all that sort of stuff. But I think my deal in at 62 years of age, after 31 years with, you know, four children and six grandchildren, married 30 years and dealing with what I've dealt with over a period of time, you know, I'm focused on certain areas. And, you know, as many of you know, because I don't hide it, I don't think I have to hide it. It says in the big book, we talk about how we developed our relationship with God. I think my real focus is, although I love newcomers, I did a meeting last night and there was a gal sitting there who had 5 days, another gal with 45 days. They were just great. They were just great, you know. I love them. You know, it's funny. They rarely, the ones with 5 and 45, they rarely get upset by the stuff I say, and I can be obnoxious and confrontational and blunt and all that stuff. They don't get upset about it. It's the people with 5 and 10 years that get upset. You know, it's, you know, the, you know, it's funny. It's, they'll come up to me, the 10 year, the guys who are comfortable in their sobriety. You know, I'd call it complacent, comfortable in their sobriety. They'll come up to me and say, "You're going to chase away newcomers. Talk too much about God. You know, I think you said the word Jesus once or something like that." You know, the newcomers love it. You know, I spoke to around, 450 young kids. They loved it. You know, they love that. They want a message of depth and weight and something other than the key to happiness is getting laid every night. You know what I mean? Or pretty woman. Or the crap that this world feeds you that you've run after your entire life, all of which never worked for us ever. You get that 23 hours a day out there. Listen, you're going to walk out there. You can watch all the Viagra commercials, the KY jelly commercials. You can watch all the TV and the movies that tell you if you got perfect skin, if you have a perfect weight, you get the perfect husband, the perfect wife, the perfect car, all the TV commercials that are designed to make you spend money because they're telling you you are crap. You are nothing unless you have this. And no matter how much you get, there's always one more commercial, one other thing that you haven't had. I never went to Jamaica, you know what I mean? One other place you haven't gone to where you're running around only to find out at 80 years old after you bankrupt yourself, spending money you don't have, buying things you don't need to impress people you don't like, that it never worked. Only to find that out, and you get that 23 hours, and I'm just not going to give it to you in here. You know, this is about the real deal. This is about the only thing that works, God. That's what this is going to be about. And so the bottom line is, and this is a program where it's all about your relationship with God. And it's also a program where a guy said to me one day, I heard you're a good speaker, but you talk too much about God. And he got that from his sponsor, who had 5 or 10 years, who didn't like me talking too much about God because he thought I would chase away the newcomers, but what he really thought is if I'm right, then he might have to change. And he was pretty comfortable the way he was. You know, still focusing on the things and addicted to the things of this world, you know, and you know, he wasn't so much worried about the newcomer as he was worried about, you know, worried about the fact that he might have to change because he wasn't in it for extra credit. Now, here's the bottom line. Nobody has to do anything I'm suggesting. I'm just going to talk about my story and what I found over 31 years. And believe me, you'll have a lot of humorists and entertainers and nice people and wonderful people will tell you it's all a bunch of crap, just don't drink and it's all okay, and you can do what's basically the standard in AA these days, hanging in there, you know, and that's the AA standard now of fantastic sobriety. How you doing? Hanging in there. Just hang in there and don't drink. Don't drink if your ass falls off, and hang in there and you're a success. And to a certain extent, I agree with the premise, okay, that if you're an alcoholic and you haven't had a drink today, no matter what's going on, you're a success. I agree with that. But the bottom line is this isn't about hanging in there. This is about experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which you have not even dreamed. This is not about being normal, living an ordinary life. It's about living an extraordinary life, unbelievable things that God can do for you. This is about a book that says if you sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. We lose fear of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. We were reborn. This is about a book that says God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. This is a book that talks about having a new freedom and a new happiness, and you can identify with the not drinking stuff and the jaywalker all you want. I feel sorry for the person with 14 and 20 and 25 years who does not identify with the people that are experiencing much of heaven and got the great fact nailed down, because that's where this program is really at. That's what I want to talk about. That's where the focus I have. Because at 31 years, I sponsor and I work with a lot of people that are 14, 15, 20, 25 years who are miserable and confused. And you wouldn't know they were miserable and confused because they talk like people with 15, 20, and 25 years. So they can be at an AA meeting, they can hold their own, they know how to talk, they know what to say, and you don't understand what's going on there. But you see, when I talk to them, I see the ashes, you know, and the dryness and the brittleness that's inside and the problems they're having with their life and stuff like that. You understand what I'm saying? So I know that it's possible to get, I know that it's possible for an alcoholic, you know, one of the things I say is I came in here when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. Because if you're an alcoholic, you can be in the gutter going through 15 divorces and not seeing your kids and not paying child support and be a total wreck and somehow convince yourself that you're not doing so badly. You know what I mean? Well, you want something, a mind that can do that can also convince yourself you're not doing so badly when you're lonely, when you're confused, when you're angry, when you're pissed off. Because you picked up a 5-year medallion and people clap for you. It's amazing, but the alcohol, you know, I have a disease that said, you know, the alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Just works like that, magically. And so my problem is and always will be not drinking. Drinking was the solution to my problem. My problem is how I feel in sobriety. Alcoholism is something, is something that attacks me when I'm sober. You know, and it attacks me when I'm sober, and when I see it 5 miles away, I don't even let it get a hold of me. I immediately push the button and say, I need a drink. And so I don't suffer from alcoholism. I suffer from something called drunk. And I start thinking that drunk is alcoholism, but drunk isn't alcoholism. Alcoholism is the thing that happens to you when you're not drunk. That's the thing that happens. You see, if you get a person here who's a non-alcoholic and a person who's an alcoholic, and you get them both drunk, you won't be able to tell the difference because they're just drunk. That's something that happens to you drunk. Now it becomes such a big thing. You get arrested for DUI. You start thinking that that's really the problem, that drunk is really the problem until you stop drinking. And you're 18 months sober, you're 3 years sober, you're 5 years sober, and your life is a bloody mess, and you got people all through your brain, and you feel crappy about yourself, and all of a sudden, and you can't have a decent relationship. And you're going through your 15th divorce, or you can't seem to link up with anybody, and everything's confusing, and then you realize it can't be alcohol because you haven't had a drink in 18 months, 3 years, whatever. It's not alcohol. It's something called alcoholism. And all of a sudden you say to yourself one day, now I know why I drank. Because it's a crummy world with crummy people and nothing ever seems to work out. And I've been doing this for 10 years and I still feel like crap. And when's it going to be better? It's like Saturday Night Live. It's always something. It's always something. And you're reading this book about being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. You say, well, when's that going to happen to me? You lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. Well, when's that going to happen to me? You have a new freedom, a new happiness. Well, when's that going to happen for me? And so you just have to be satisfied with just feeling crummy and hanging in there from meeting to meeting, almost like from bar to bar, from drink to drink. And all of a sudden you're just using AA the same way you use the bar. You just get here at 5:30 and you don't just drink booze. You drink coffee and talk to somebody and you get a little bit of a feeling of relief until you get in the car and you start managing your life again and trying to figure out how to get, I don't know, the Viagra, the car, whatever it is, again, and managing your life and everything they say we shouldn't do and everything like that. And you know, just like it says in the big book, in the chapter, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know there's something more, just like Bill Dotson said, something you haven't got. That's what he said looking at me. He says, I knew there was a release, a happiness, there was something more, something I haven't gotten. You hang around these guys that have, you know, whatever it is, 30 years, whatever it is, somebody who you see what they have, what you want, and you're saying, but how do you do that deal? And you sense there's something more and there's something wrong, but you're not quite sure what it is. And of course, when you're 11 years sober, or 15 years sober, or 7 years sober, whatever the hell it is, you come upon the feeling that, well, you're supposed to be better than this, so you're not going to tell anybody. You wouldn't even know what to tell them anyway. You know, what are you going to tell them? You know, you just don't know what it is. You must be doing okay. You're picking up the medallions. Isn't that what it's all about? Because it says right here. It says here. It said in the thing I read right here. It says, the only purpose for an AA group is sobriety, not drinking. Do you believe that? Hey, if the only purpose for you being here is not drinking, you're going to drink. You understand that? Well, you don't have to understand it. I understand. That's why people drink. Have you realized yet that people come to AA and they stay here for a while and then they drink? Have you ever seen that happen? Have you ever seen anybody drink after 3 years? You ever seen anybody drink after 5 years? You ever seen people drink after 10? I've seen them drink after 25 years. You know why people drink after coming to AA? Because the only reason they're here for is to not drink. If the only reason you're here for is to not drink, I guarantee you'll drink. Or you'll be miserable, or you'll be dry and miserable. I mean, anybody who's read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, really read it, and read the 12 and 12, and worked this thing seriously, and gotten this thing seriously, knows this is not about not drinking. It's everything about not drinking, but it's not about not drinking. It's only a little bit about not drinking. Once you get rid of the drinking, then the real fun's again. This is about completely changing your entire life and who and what you are and going through a transformation, a spiritual and emotional transformation. Otherwise, why would we need that 11th step? Why would we need faith in God? Burn the idea in the person's wife or no wife, job or no wife. All you need is your... Why would you even have to talk about a relationship with God? He is doing for you what we can. Why would you even need to talk about this stuff if it was only about not drinking? Obviously, it's about more than not drinking. It's about spiritual development. No matter how much we don't want to hear it, and that's the other thing we have here. Unfortunately or fortunately, the incredible fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is made up of alcoholics, right? It ain't Well People's Anonymous. You know, I came in here and every once in a while I'd complain about some people in AA and what they were doing. My sponsor said, well, you must have obviously thought that you accidentally fell into Well People's Anonymous. So you have a group of people whose chief characteristic is defiance at all shades of sobriety from one day to 50 years, all across the board. And they all suffer from the same disease, and it has to do with denial and not wanting to do this thing really, and somehow, some way, working things out so they can do this thing but not really do this thing and change but not change that much, and be defiant about anybody who's trying to change. And this group is basically, you think the group is hanging together to help you stay sober, and what you don't realize is that there's this huge current undercurrent of the group that's basically saying, don't do this. Don't listen to that guy. And so sometimes you hear stuff from the group that is diametrically opposed to alcohol. You know, how many times have you been to a meeting where people say, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, like religious is a dirty word? How many times have you heard people say, I'm recovering a Roman Catholic, I'm recovering this, I'm recovering that, and put down religion? You read in the book, you know what it says? First of all, besides learning the history of AA, that you find out for the first 4 years they didn't have the big book and all they did was read the Bible, and that they said, as a matter of fact, the book of James, we were almost named the James Club, which I'm going to talk a little bit about. 1 Corinthians 13 and the Sermon on Mark were Sermon on the Mount were absolutely essential for recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not making that up. Look at Dr. Bob, the good old timers. And then you find out that Bill Wilson was sponsored essentially, you know, by Ed Dowling, the Jesuit priest, and Sam Shoemaker, the guy who did the Oxford movement. One of the guys who the main movers and shakers of the Episcopal priest, Calvary Church. And you start reading in the big book where it says, we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. You know what that's out of? That's out of the big book. That's out of our basic text. We lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people were right. It even says we encourage church membership. It's not pushed upon. You don't have to do it, but we encourage it. Most of us join churches. Well, where do you go from there to the undercurrent of hatred for religion and organized religion that you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous? It's diametrically opposed. So next time you start thinking that everybody in AA and the Fellowship of AA is all designed to set you in the right directions, think again. You better know this book. You better know the book. You better know the material. You better hang out with the right people, because in this group, the same people in this group are the same people you hung out with at the bars. That's where we get them from. No, it's true. The bars, you know those crazy wackos you hung out with in the bars that said, when you said, I got to get home because my wife and kids are waiting, they say, forget about it. You don't need that. You know the same people who endorsed all your crazy ideas? Those same people said, I don't give a shit with it. You know those people? We went through the bars, we got them all out, and we brought them in here. They're in here. And they're the ones that are telling that guy, Russell's a good speaker, but he talks too much about God. And letting him know that there's something wrong with talking about God, even though there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And all it does is talk about God. And then you realize the other axiom in Alcoholics Anonymous, spiritual axiom, which I talked about in here before. My first wife told me, you come on drunk one more time and I'm leaving you. Pretty straightforward. Come on drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. So I got in my car, I drove 3 blocks away, got to the first light, said, well, what the hell did she mean by that? It's confusing, you know? And that's the second axiom in AA. Whenever an alcoholic hears or sees or reads anything or is told anything he doesn't like, it confuses him. Or he gets angry at it and makes it go away. And so 90% of the program you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that may be good stuff, you throw away. You get a good sponsor, he tells you something you don't want to hear, you get mad and you throw it away, you get another sponsor. Everybody knows the third step prayer, but nobody knows the line right after the third step prayer, because it's a line that gets people angry, so they throw it away. You know the line right after the third step prayer? Some of you may know, because you may have heard me say this before, but that's a perfect example. Right after the third step prayer, step 5, it says the following. In chapter 5, I'm sorry. It says the following. Let's see what we got it. Find that third step prayer. We're now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understand Him, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them would bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Everybody knows that. But nobody knows what the line is right after that, because they don't like the line. So they throw it away and make believe it's not there. And that's what we do with most of the book. We read this big book, and it has all sorts of lines like that next line. And when we come to those next line, we don't like it. We're scared of it. It doesn't fit within our theology or what we want to do. It sounds a little bit too preachy or religious. So we throw it away because we figure it's not important. We skip it. And every line that sounds like it in the big book, we skip that line. Until we finally get to the end of the big book and we think we're doing the program and we're doing the big book. And what we think the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is acceptance is the answer to all our problems. That's what we boil this book down to. Acceptance is the answer to all our problems. And then we have nothing but problems, and we don't know why we have nothing but problems when acceptance is the answer to all our problems, which it's not, by the way. Sometimes it's courage. It's always faith. And we wonder at 5 years or 10 years why we're drinking and why we have problems when we never really understood what the big book is. And then one day, the doctor says, you've got terminal cancer, or you got 20 years sober, or you got 6 months to live, or your wife dies, or your husband dies, or you lose your job. And you read this book again, and all of a sudden, you read this line. The line right after the third step, it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And all of a sudden, at 20 years sober, we start thinking, man, I don't remember meeting that. And all of a sudden, the line has meaning for us because we're not really worried about the Viagra, the car, or any of that stuff anymore, or, you know, the girlfriend or the boyfriend. Now we're thinking about dying in eternity. And all of a sudden, the God thing doesn't seem so goofy to us because all of a sudden, at 60 years old or 50 years old, we've decided to stop acting like 13 and 12-year-olds and started to get serious about our lives because we know we don't have that much more time on the planet. And all of a sudden, all these lines like, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now, and all the stuff they talk about the God isn't throwaway lines anymore. The stuff, all of a sudden, we sort of see these things. I mean, I didn't know that was in that book. And we start seeing stuff, and we start reading stuff. And all of a sudden, we start reading about how they used to read the Bible. And all of a sudden, maybe we become interested in that at 60 years old or 70 years old or something like that. When things start getting serious, we start deciding to act like grown-ups. All of a sudden, it becomes interesting to us. We're no longer chasing the stuff out there. And all of a sudden, we're actually reading the seventh step and the 12 and 12 and seeing what it means when it talks about when it talks about giving your life over and being addicted to prestige and romance and money and things like that. You start reading it and you start taking it to heart and you say, I've been doing this all my life. I've been doing this all wrong. I haven't been even listening to what they're trying to say. That it's all about character building and the whole thing is about my relationship with God. Now I understand what they say. See to him that my your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. When I used to laugh at people, sit in the back of the room and mock people that talked about that stuff, and all of a sudden becomes important. You say, why didn't I do this 20 years ago? Why didn't I do this 30 years ago? And you start realizing how much you've been addicted to, your mind's been addicted to the stuff that's actually killing you and actually toxic to you. And so they come to this seven-step deal where they say, and so if that's true, if it's true, you know, that whenever an alcoholic hears something, sees something, or is told something he doesn't like, he makes it go away. And one way of making it go away is just get angry at the person who talks. Get angry. Just get angry. Who the hell is he? What right does he have to say? You know, let me tell you something. If you live a life based upon self-will run riot, filled with selfishness, what does it say we are? It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the root of all our problems, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Usually we think we're provoked, but usually it's because we made decisions based upon self to put it in that position. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. We don't think so because our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And even though for 10, 15, 20 years we have a low level or high level of anxiety, we don't even think there's anything wrong with that because we're so used to it because that's just the way I am. That's just the way life is, and it's never going to be better. And that's just the way that the deal is going to be. And so when you're at like that, and you act like that, and you feel like that, and that's the way you are, and that's your best thinking got you into these jams, and all of a sudden and things keep on unraveling for you, and it never gets that good. And you come in here, and you accidentally bump into somebody who's got their crap together, who has worked this thing, you know, has faith, and it's working for them. What do you think the chances are of them saying something to you that's not going to fit within your philosophy? In other words, what do you think the chances of once you come in here at 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, or 10 years, and you see somebody who has what you want, you know what I mean? And is, you know, and it has the life that you want and the spirit that you want and what's going on that you want, what do you think the chances are if you hang out with them, of them turning to you one day and telling you something about your life or about you that you would rather not hear? Big. Big. The chances are that if you come in here filled with the disease of alcoholism and you want help and you really want help and you go up to somebody to help you, they're going to tell you something that you're going to, you ready for this, disagree with. They're going to say, let me tell you something, when my wife said, if you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. That's the least hurtful thing you're going to hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, listen, if you've ever heard anything in AA that's going to piss you, that's pissed you off, if anybody's ever told you something or said anything on the podium that's pissed you off, well, let me tell you something. Hold on to your horses, because if you're going to hang around here and if you're going to grow up and become a grown-up person, you're going to digest and hear and have to put up with a lot of crap and a lot of truths about yourself and life that you're not going to want to hear. And you're going to say a million times, I'll tell you one thing, I didn't sign up for this crap. You know what I mean? I didn't sign up for this crap. I'm not listening to this stuff, but I'm telling you, it's right out of the book. It says it right here. It says right here in this deal. Because there's a lot of old ideas. Did you know that? It says we got to get rid of our old ideas, or the result is nil until we let go absolutely. And let me tell you something. Not drinking is but one old idea. Listen, I was 9 years sober. I was 9 years sober. I lost all my credit cards before I realized if you spend more money than you make, you go into debt. Did you know that? Do you know how many people are living a dishonest life because they're addicted to living above their means because they worry about themselves and what other people think about them, and they buy stuff they don't need to impress people they don't like? And do you know how much how the crazy stuff we do with people and how we act, and we don't even know what's going on? You know, because we got stuff going on deep down inside that's part and parcel of our alcoholism, just as symptomatic as drinking, but we don't see it. That we just don't see it. You know, you're lathering up in the shower, you're driving your car, and a voice comes from somewhere, from Venus. You're an idiot. You're stupid. You're a jerk. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. But, you know, you hear this stuff. You hear the accuser telling you what an idiot you are, how stupid you are, how you'll never come out to anything, how you'll never be okay. And you look around the car to see where it's coming from, and there's nobody there but you, and it's coming from you. I mean, you guys are worried about the committee. You ever hear people talking about the committee? Don't worry about the committee, because don't ever worry about the people that are talking in your brain where you're invited to the meeting. At least you're invited to the meeting. You know what I mean? You better worry about the executive secret committee. You know, the black ops committee that's meeting in secret, and they don't even tell you when and where they're meeting. You know, they're the ones that say, let's shoot up this idea. You're an asshole. You're an idiot. You're a jerk. You know, where do you think that's coming from? My living room? It's coming from you. And I got some bad news for you. Those thoughts and those feelings that are coming from you are coming from someplace inside you 24/7. They don't like go away to Jamaica for 3 years and then say come back when you're in the shower. They're working on you when you're in the shower and when you hear them. They're working on you when you don't hear them. They're the ones that stop you from applying for that job. They're the ones that screw up that relationship. They're the ones that tell you to do things that are absolutely crazy. Why did you do that thing? And you don't even know you're hearing them because they're coming from the secret committee. And there's a million things like that going on in your thinking, which you think is normal. And, of course, anybody who sort of points you in the right direction, you always say, well, screw that guy. Because he's telling you something you don't want to hear. On step 7, it says the following. It says, certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of Alcoholics Anonymous wants to deprecate material achievement. In other words, we don't want to put down material achievement. This is what I love about AA. This is what we do in AA. We tell people, don't worry about the God thing. Don't worry about the God thing. It's God that you want. Don't worry about the God thing. And then we spend the entire book talking about our Creator and the Creator of the universe. You know why? Well, because that's AA speak. I mean, get used to it. It's AA speak. Feeding out, you see, because alcoholics are children. They're childish. We're childish. I'm childish. I'm obstreperous. I think I know everything. I'll run off the cliff thinking I'm right. And so the only way to get me is you can't come at me with a frontal assault. You got to come at me sideways. You got to somehow tell me something. I don't want to say it's untruthful, but we have a way of talking to us, so we don't assault. We come around the side. You know, like in the Revolutionary War when they were shooting from behind bushes. You know what I mean? So here's what we say. The first line is, certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants... I mean, don't you love it in AA when they tell you the only thing you have to do is not drink? And then you finally buy into that. And they say, oh, and don't hang around those people. And so you argue about that a little bit more. And they say, so you don't argue about it. And he says, oh, it's best not to go to those places. You know, and so you argue about that a little more, and then you don't go to the places, and they say, you can't really think that resentment's going to kill you. And so you argue about that, have you argue about that, and then you give up on the resentments. And it's like every week it's another thing that you got to give up. I thought this was just about drinking. And every week it's one more thing that you, which is part of your person. I told my sponsor, this is my personality. He says, your personality's killing you. I'm in love with my personality. I'm wonderful. And every week it's just one more thing that you think is the greatest thing in the world that you have, that they'll applaud you on the X Factor, that your sponsor's saying, you better get rid of that thing. He said, well, wait a second. And it seems every time you got something, I finally got something, my brain, well, the one thing I got is I'm brilliant. He says, you better get rid of that. You're crazy. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can't hang on to everything. You got to give it all up. All over to him. Isn't that what it says? Give it all over to him. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no merveille wants to deprecate material achievement. Nor do we enter into debate with many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of this life. You know, start thinking about what you think about. You know, you're in a program where it talks about being spiritual. See what your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to be. Start thinking about what you think about most of the day, what your conversation is about most of the day. When you converse with people, what do you converse? What are you talking about all most of the day? You see what it says here? It says, nor do we enter into debate that with many who so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. I'm going to give you a suggestion that in Alcoholics Anonymous, the main thing in here is the passionate desire to cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object. That 90% of the people here are still chasing after money, power, and prestige while professing to be spiritual. And they walk out the rooms and they start thinking how to manage their lives to get more stuff or keep the stuff they have. And they're thinking about it in the rooms and it comes up in the discussion meetings, and this whole thing is about things, people, me, stuff. And then it says, nor do we enter into a debate with many who so passionately cling that the belief that they satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life, but we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and, yes, girls, and boys, but mostly girls, yeah, and boys, and romance. Man, I'll tell you, you know, I go home every night. My wife likes to watch those novellas. You know what I mean? She loves the girly flicks. And, you know, I love the flicks where people get killed a lot, you know. And it's true. But, you know, it's amazing how much this society thrusts upon us. And I know you can call me a party pooper. That if you could only find a man who would love you and you could love him and a white picket fence, you know, in a house, your life would be wonderful. You know, how many people's hopes have been dashed upon that deal? Or if you only found the right girl, I spent my whole life looking for her, the one that was going to fix me. You know what I mean? Money, power, prestige, and romance. Looking for that. It's the undercurrent. It's almost impossible to get rid of it. We're so addicted to that stuff. And the world doesn't do anything to stop. As a matter of fact, the world, if you look at the billboards, it tells us we're right. That's what the billboards say. You know, that's what we need. If we don't have that, there's something wrong with us. When we seem to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. In all these strivings, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap have been our lack of humility. We had lacked a perspective to see that character buildings and spiritual values had to come first. And in A, spiritual values have to do with your relationship with God. That's what it has to do with. It's all about him. That's why they're constantly pointing you to him. That's why they're constantly taught. And they say, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come past you and countless others. And somehow, the more you focus on him, the less important a new car becomes. I spoke about that, I think, last week when I talked about the new car thing. And, you know, every year I had to have a new car, and it's the 5 weeks after I got it was an old car, but I still had to keep on doing it. So, you know, new car, new haircut, a new blouse, a new this, a new that, a new whatever it is that's going to make you feel okay, and it never quite worked out, but your whole life is searching for that new thing that's going to make you feel okay. And, you know, all of us, and the only thing that broke me of that addiction, and that addiction is even stronger and you're in more denial than the alcohol addiction. Because they can't, because they don't arrest you for driving while greedy. They don't arrest you for driving while lustful. They don't arrest you for driving while vain. They don't arrest you for driving while superficial. You may ultimately lose your job, and a lot of things may happen because of all those things, but it's not so obvious. So look how many years had to go by and how much you had to explode just to get to the point where you said, yeah, maybe I have a drinking problem. Imagine what you have to go through to even get to the point where you're even willing to consider that spending too much money on stuff or going after this might be a problem. Maybe you ought to look at God, especially when everybody's in the room saying he talks too much about God. That's not really the problem. Just don't drink and hang in there. Just hang. How you doing? Hanging in there. Oh, man, that's something to shoot for. For us, now listen, here's where it gets good. This is the good part. This is what I like. This is why I like step seven. You know, I always like, you know, they say whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, this is a spiritual axiom of AA, so if you don't like it, write New York. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. Now, you got to understand, the old idea of the alcoholic is, if I'm disturbed and I'm pissed off, there's something wrong with you. You understand? And we can prove it mathematically. So, if I say something and you get mad, you go outside and you get mad at me. And you got mad at me and you talk about me because I said something. How did he say that? Because I made you feel, because then you say things like, why are you angry? He made me angry. You know, and I'll tell you, if I got that power, you're a dead chicken. No wonder your life is crap when you live in a world where everybody around you have no control over. They make you angry. They affect your feelings. And of course, with us, our feelings are more important than anything else. Yes, I killed those 15 people and the 5 children, but they pissed me off. They shouldn't have done that, you know, because my feelings are more important than anything. Because I'm an alcoholic and my feelings are, that's it. That's the Valhalla. And that's how we live. And those are all old ideas. That's the deal with us. You know, you think the alcohol is the problem? Where do you start dealing with the alcoholism? For us, the process of gaining new perspective. So whenever you're disturbed, no matter the problems, what you ultimately realize is we go through this crap, we go through this horrible stuff until we finally get it straight, that if you're disturbed, you finally say the one thing that's not alcoholic, you say, there must be something wrong with me. Why did what Russell say bother me so much? And all of a sudden, you start writing it out, start writing why you're mad, you start looking at a little history, you talk to your sponsor, you pray about it, and you say, that's why. And you see something, you believe something, you say, you know, he's right. It's because of this. And then all of a sudden, you see what the problem is. You see why it disturbs you. You see what's wrong with you. And all of a sudden, you embrace and you say, that's actually right. And you accept it. And all of a sudden, you go from being 8 years old to being 12 years old. And the next time you hear somebody say it, it doesn't bother you anymore. And somebody says, why doesn't that bother you? I say, because it's the truth. And you embrace it. And all of a sudden, you're like an adult. And then somebody says, how did you do that? And I said, man, tell him, I fought it. I fought that deal. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. Hey, you thought you were signed up for AA, and you thought, well, now it's going to be good. No, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. I said to Ray O'Keefe, I said, when am I going to be financially secure? He said, never. I said, the book says, one of the promises, I'll be financially secure. He says, it doesn't say that. I says, yes, it does. He says, read it. He says, it says, you'll lose fear of financial insecurity. He says, you see, you'll always be broke, but it won't bother you. I said, well, thanks for clearing that up. And he was right. It's only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. Isn't that fun? You'd only get humiliated once, a lot of times. It was only at the end of a long road, marked by successive defeats and humiliations. Well, isn't that something to look forward to? And the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That doesn't sound like it's a lot of fun, does it? That we began to feel humility as something more than condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told and soon realizes for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is his first step towards liberation from its paralyzing grip. And thus, being humiliated, being pounded upon, and finally coming to the point at maybe 20 years sober that another woman is just not going to solve my problem. There's something wrong with me. I better stop. That another man is just not going to solve my problem. that a car is not going to solve my problem, that the money is not going to solve my problem, that, you know, what do we have to go through? You know, it says a long road. That's why it takes 20 or 30 years. Now, I understand with alcoholics, we're told used to 20 or 30 seconds. This is how I solve a problem. Give me a double scotch. Whack. Solved. You may have to go to 10 years of meetings to get the effect that two jiggers of scotch will give you in like 5 seconds. You know, it's just the way it is. People come up to me and says, I feel this, I feel that, I feel the other thing. He says, oh, I know exactly how you feel. I felt the same way too. You'll get over it in about 10 or 15 years. And they sort of chuckle, but it's like a nervous chuckle. Because they're thinking, they get the idea that I'm not really kidding. And here's the part, here we go, here we get the good part, okay? This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. This is where we start getting different ideas about things. Now I'm going to give you a real different idea. I'm going to leave you with a real different idea tonight. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego suffering. You see, what it says in this book later on, I haven't read it, and it says before this, it says, what you think is everything that happens to you is bad, that hurts you and scares you, is horrible. It's a bad thing. You complain to people, you complain in the rooms, you feel sorry for yourself. You don't realize that's when good stuff is happening to you. You see? Now, I know that sounds crazy. I know that sounds crazy. And you want to think I'm crazy. You'd like to get angry at me and make that go away. You understand? I know you want to make that go away. And it doesn't sound right. You would rather drink, drug, lie, steal, hide, move to Milwaukee, do anything to avoid the pain. I understand that. That's the way you live your life. What I'm saying can't possibly be true. You know what I mean? Because you didn't sign up for that deal. I understand that. You signed up to live on the yacht happily ever after. And so this idea that our eyes begin to open to the immense value of painful ego puncturing, well, I just want to point out something to you. This is not my feelings about things. This is not my idea. I'm with you guys. This is the book. This is the 12 steps. This is our program. So next time people tell you the program is acceptance is the answer to all our problems, okay? Say, there's a few other things in the program. It says, until now our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle has always been our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. It says we learned the value of suffering. We understand. Hey, I understand why the Israelites spent 40 years in the desert to walk something that should have taken them like 4 weeks. You know what I mean? 40 years. But by the time that 40 years, they walked out of Egypt. And when they came out of Egypt, they had a slave mentality. They were slaves for 400 years. Man, by the time that 40 years went by, all the slaves had died off. And the kids that were alive that walked into the promised land, they were ready to kick ass and take names. You know, they were born in the desert. And we all do desert time in here. We all go through the divorces, we all go through the deaths, we all go through, you know, the people, the unfairness, we all go through the firings, we all go through the financial stuff, we all go through the cancer, we all go through the sickness, we all go through it together, and it's horrible, and we whine, and we cry, and we join the ranks of the thumb-sucking crybabies until we grow up, okay, and we do what they say in the book of James. Remember the book of James? We were almost called the James Club. First line in the book of James, rejoice when you have troubles. Rejoice, say, hey, give it to me more. Hey, give me more, God. I'm ready for you. I want that. Test me. Hit me with it. You know what I mean? He says, because when you have troubles and you've got this relationship, when you have troubles and you don't have a relationship with God and the only person you're relying on about yourself, it's a scary thing and you become a thumb-sucking crybaby and you become filled with self-pity and anger, which is what I did, and you drink. Or you fold up like a wet newspaper in the rain. But when you're focused on him, when you do what they're talking about in here, him, and you develop a relationship with God, the harder it comes on you, what the book of James says, is because when you have troubles and trials, you go through perseverance. And perseverance increases your strength, matures your strength, and makes you more of an adult and more of a person of character, a mensch. And that's like the Marine Corps going through boot camp, and that's what you become. And if you think about your life, and you think about growing up and how you've grown and how you've changed, you're going to have to admit that with all the bullshit you've been through and all the crap you've been through going into up to this point, you know, you wouldn't be the person you are today. I'm talking about the good stuff if the crap hadn't happened to you and you stayed sober throughout the crap, even though, like, making the sausages, it didn't look pretty when it was happening. I knew you ran around and you whined and you cried and you told your sponsor, you did all that, and you thought you were going crazy, but the truth is you weren't in a bar drinking. You were somehow, some way, making your way towards somehow feeling through some sort of faith that God was going to take care of you and you would get out of the deal. And ultimately, you got out of the deal and it worked and you were a stronger person for it. So the next time the same thing came along or a different thing, you were even tougher and more easily able to handle it, and you were more of an adult instead of a 13-year-old child. And so when you start adopting that, listen, I don't necessarily lie. I want things to go smooth. I want the $1 million in the bank. I want it. But I know when the stuff comes at me, I don't harbolize. I say, hey, man, this is, you know, this is God, because he loves me, sending me stuff that I got to deal with. And you know something? When you start stop panicking over bad stuff happening to you and suffering, and you start realizing it's for your own benefit, and all you have to look at is God, like they talk about in this book, and hang around with people that's talking about him, because if you hang around with people that are sucking their thumbs saying, oh my God, this is terrible, you got to do something bad. If you hang around with the jokers, you hung around in the bar, and they're all in here, you know, telling you better do this and you better do that. If you hang around the right people, reading the right books at the right time, you will always have the conversation going in your mind, he will protect me. Thy will be done, not mine. And you will always come out okay. And let me tell you something, when even bad things are good, you never have a bad day. When even the bad things are okay, you never have a problem. And somebody says, how's it going? You say, hey, unbelievable. It's all great. So God bless you. Next week we'll talk about it.